Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Tom Clark here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba Through the Hour, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. Do you have a question for Zorba? Well, give us a call at 800-462-7413. And Zorba, along with the listeners' calls, you always have some interesting research to pick around.
Absolutely. We're going to talk about chili peppers, the numbness that may occur when you use chili pepper capsaicin on nerve endings, new research that may help people with chronic pain and surgical pain.
Interesting.
And women and mastectomies, what you should do if you've got the gene that says you're at a high risk for breast cancer, a change in the paradigm, some very interesting stuff going on.
Oh, and a medical myth buster that women will be interested in, or you'll be interested in if your wife happens to be pregnant at this time, having to do with pregnancy and stress. That's coming up, our medical myth buster later in the hour. Zorba, our recipe this week.
Yes, Maria's Vegetarian Chili, a perfect recipe for this time of year, something that you, Tom, will find yummy.
From St. Louis, Missouri listener Maria Tutsky. That's coming up in, just a little less than half an hour from now. Again, 800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener now in Middleton, Idaho. Hi.
Hello, Tom and Zorba.
How can we help you?
Well, I just started getting back into the gym, and at first I was doing a lot of cardio, whatnot, on treadmills and ellipticals, and now I'm doing a lot of plyometric squats and lunges, and I find that every night after I work out and the next morning, my heels just kill me. And I was wondering if, Zorba, you could recommend a specific type of shoe to use in the gym. I don't do cross-training at this point.
So your heels kill you after you work out. What about in the morning when you get up? What happens then? Pain or discomfort in your feet or your heels?
When you're as big as these are, everything hurts in the morning when you roll out of bed. But, yeah, my heels definitely hurt me, especially after I've spent time on a treadmill and whatnot or doing lunges. My heels definitely, I feel quite a bit of pain.
Oh, sure.
The next morning.
Sure.
Can I ask, is the pain on the bottom of the heel or in the back of the heel? Does it feel like a bone pain or a ligament pain? Can you tell?
See, it doesn't feel like a ligament pain, and it's on the bottom of my heel. It's not on the back. It's on the bottom. And it almost feels as if, when I'm walking, I kind of hit too hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I land too hard on my heel and whatnot.
Okay.
And it's causing that.
Now, you walk barefoot around the house?
Typically, and definitely when I get home from the gym, I usually, kick the shoes off and lie around on the bed for a bit and then get up and I definitely notice it then as well.
Yeah. You've got this is plantar fasciitis. That's what this is. Let me explain what that is. On the bottom of your foot, you've got a bunch of bones and then you've got your muscles. And what you do is you push against the arch, what we call the arch, but it's really a great big area of connective tissue called the plantar fascia, and you push against that as you're actually walking. You actually sort of push yourself off. And what happens is the connections at one end, the heel, often, or the connections at the other end, the bottom of the toes, the metatarsal heads they're called, where we walk on, can become inflamed and swollen. And there's some definite things you can do about it. The first thing is you cannot walk barefoot around the house. Extremely important. Not moderately, not mildly important. You get home and you put on either Tevas or you put on house slippers that you want to have, but you can't walk barefoot because that's too hard on the plantar fascia. So that means other than in the shower, you're wearing something on the bottom of your foot. Very important to do.
Even just flip-flops and little $5 flip-flops.
You bet.
Will be.
Anything that gives you cushion. The fact is, the better, the more cushion you have, the better off you are. So $5 flip-flops will work, but frankly, Crocs work much better. You can buy generic Crocs and regular Crocs for very little money, and they give a lot of cushion as you're actually walking. That's the idea. The second thing is your shoe. You've got a good shoe when you're doing the lunges and you're at the gym?
Well, see, right now I kind of vacillate between my nasty Nike shoes that are light, so I like running in those, but they don't really offer me a whole lot of support. And then I go to some K-Swiss that I have.
Okay, then I've got a good idea. What I'm going to do, what my recommendation is, taping the bottom of the foot with athletic tape. Now, you can go to any drugstore, any athletic store. You can buy athletic tape for taping. It's a white tape. It's an inch and a half thick. Inch and a half thick, that's all it is. Very simple. And there's a way that you can tape your foot. And what we're going to do, we're going to put that on our website. We're going to put information on our website that shows you how you can tape your foot. And I'm going to give you a perfect personal example. I got plantar fasciitis about 4 or 5 years ago. I don't know how I got it. I used to walk around barefoot around the house. And then, as my wife said, I started taking my own advice. And I stopped walking barefoot. I put on my Tevas or my Crocs. I taped my foot every single day. Every single day I take the tape off, put the new tape on for 1 month, and it went away. And it takes a long time for this to go away. It does not go away in a day or two. By the way, anti-inflammatories work. To leave twice a day will help, but it's not the whole thing. You've got to actually tape the foot, not walk barefoot. That's the
Should she back off on the exercise machine for a while, too, or not?
If you notice that the exercise, that there's one machine that really does it, Tom brings up a really good point. You may want to back off on that one machine. But my guess is if you're taped and you're wearing the right shoes, you can do it. And it's probably more the pressure on there along with the barefootedness when you're walking that's the problem.
Wow. I totally wasn't going to guess that. Okay, cool.
Good luck. Come to the website. We'll show you how to tape it.
All right. Well, hey, thanks a lot, Zorba.
Thank you for the call. We appreciate it. 800-462-7413. And Zorba, speaking of feet, let's grab a quick question from our Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox about hiking. This one from David in Mequonago, Wisconsin. David writes, I try to hike outside as much as possible. However, in the winter, when the weather is not nearly as nice, I walk on a treadmill in the basement. Do I get a better workout by walking fast indoors on a machine with little, if any, respect to terrain changes, or if I hike somewhat slower outdoors with all of Mother Nature's ever-changing contours?
Yes, well, we do love Mother Nature, don't we? We love those ever-changing contours no matter where you are. Well, there are a couple ways to look at this. Way number one, how much energy are you expending? Well, energy for us often is measured if in a non-experimental way through sweat. So how much sweat are you doing? But the fact is you move your body from point A to point B, it expends a certain number of calories. Now, if you move it quicker, what you're doing is building up the muscle in your heart. So from an aerobic point of view, the quicker and the more stressful, physically stressful the movement, the more aerobic it is, the more your heart will build up. But when you're exercising, it's not just your heart. It's your heart and your soul.
Oh, I was thinking the same thing, believe it or not. Maybe the karmic experience outdoors might be worth the lessening of the actual exercise benefit.
Absolutely, Tom. You are 100% right on task. Right on task. And like I say to people, you know, here it is. If you have no social relationships, you have no friends, you go to the gym every day, you've got the bod to kill for, and you don't have anyone else to talk to about it, what good is it?
Yeah.
So time in Mother Nature counts just as much as moving that heartbeat up and making it aerobically fit.
Keep those questions, comments, and tips coming. Just send them along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Question for Zorba? Give us a call at 800-462-7413. Zorba to a listener now in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You bet. We appreciate it. How can we help you?
Well, I've been getting this interesting sensation on my leg, over my shin area, just one leg. What it is I'll get this very warm sensation for 3 to 5 seconds, and then it goes away. And the first time it happened, I thought I was walking by a space heater. And I thought, oh, okay, didn't think much of it. And then a few hours later, it happened again. I really started looking around. And I thought, this is really strange.
There was no obvious, no space heater, no obvious heat source that would cause this time.
Right. So my leg was getting this warmth feeling, very, very warm. Not hot, but very warm.
Now, how long has this been going on now?
For about 4 to 5 weeks. It started off just one or two or three times a day, the first week or so. And then now, 10 to 12 times a day it happens. It's just very strange.
Okay, now this is associated with pain or not associated with pain?
No pain. And it happens, like I could just be driving my car and it happens for a few seconds.
Okay, so it's not associated, it doesn't happen all the time with exercise, where you're walking uphill, doing some exercise, or at the gym. It just happens kind of randomly.
Right, because I might be sitting down and it happens.
Mm-hmm. How long does it last?
Just like 3 to 5 seconds.
Oh, very short. So just
a
short period
of time. Yeah,
very
short, but it's like, oh, my leg's hot again.
Yeah. What you want to look at is see the position that you're in. That's what you want to see. You want to see whether or not this is related to pressure along the sciatic nerve or along another nerve that you're putting pressure on. Something that lasts for 3 to 5 seconds is usually, quite often, it's nerve pain. It's kind of sharp nerve pain. It comes... gone like an ice cream headache, you know, where all of a sudden you have...
But this is warmth.
That's right.
Pain.
But it is a neurological sensation, even though it's warmth. And you bring up a good point. It's not pain, but nerves carry things besides pain. They're carrying the sensation of pain and cold and other sensations. And I think this is neurological pain, and I think it's related to pressure. I think what's happening is you're putting pressure on a nerve. That's what's going on. I don't know exactly where it is and where the nerve is. And you've noticed that it happens in a random fashion, but I think it may be related to a position that you're in or were just in. So besides looking at what you're doing, look at your position, get a little calendar, keep it with you, write it down. You know, afterwards you say, oh, I just had the pain. Take it out, put on your calendar, have the pain, and write down just what happened before and just what happened afterwards. That's the way to be a detective to these things that are very difficult to follow. And you've got to write it down contemporaneously with the actual issue. Around the time, you've got to write it down to see, gee, what's exactly causing this pain and discomfort. And often you'll find it out by writing it on a regular basis. So that's my guess as to what this is. I don't think it's anything serious, but it must be very discomforting for you.
Well, it just is strange, but you know, because it's happening more frequently, that I'm just like, what in the world could this be?
I would try. I'd be a detective, see what the position is, and call us back and let us know. I can just see Tom has that quizzical look on his face that you can easily see through the airwaves as to what is this. But I think it's neurological pain that's positional. So good luck to you.
Thank you.
Sure. Thanks a lot. We appreciate the call. And speaking of warm things, you mentioned research, Zorba. Surgeons are doing interesting things with hot peppers these days, huh?
Exactly. You know, one of the issues about the pain of surgery, the pain of childbirth, just plain pain overall, is we have some drugs that work. We have anti-inflammatories like naproxen and ibuprofen. Then we have drugs like Tylenol. And then we really have drugs that are heavy-duty drugs, hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, they're all opioid derivatives. They work for many people, but they have side effects. Nausea for some, vomiting for others, constipation for others. And frankly, the drugs, you know, they inebriate you. And a lot of people don't like that. You know, so it's hard to go to work when you have pain in your knee or chronic pain and take an opioid and, you know, and be at work. So we've got issues with how we do these. And these are our nerves often that are firing because they've been disturbed. So one way we do this for instance, for pregnancy is to give an epidural block. One of the things that many people are doing after surgeries is, for instance, colon surgery, is to give an epidural block. And this is blocking a specific set of nerve endings out of the spinal cord. This uses chili peppers, not just peppers that you grind up, but capsaicin cream that comes from chili peppers. You can buy it in different creams in the market. And they expose the nerves to the chili pepper juice that obviously has been sterilized.
This is during the surgery.
Mm-hmm. That's right. One of the studies was an open knee surgery where you are doing a knee replacement, and during the surgery they are actually dripping the capsaicin cream around the nerves. And what the capsaicin cream does is it basically overfloods the nerves with an impulse so that the nerves shut down. And they shut down, the theory is, for 3 to 5 days. In other words, they can't work because you basically fatigue them and they're not going to work for a while. And it seems to be working. In other words, this may be something that then becomes essentially a procedure after surgery where you have capsaicin cream mixed maybe with a little lidocaine, and you shut off the nerves for 3 to 5 days while your body is healing, so you don't feel the sensation.
This is a sort of numbing, because I know if you eat really, really hot stuff, and sometimes your tongue gets
numb. That's exactly it. You know, and the hot part obviously can be very uncomfortable for people. Well, this is during surgery, so you don't notice it, but it's the numbness after the hot part, which is what they're shooting for. And I bet you, Tom, that's where they came up with the idea. They probably went to an Asian restaurant or a Mexican restaurant and they had red hot chili peppers and bang, their mouth got numb and somebody had a bright idea in their head and they said, let's numb the nerves after surgery. And bang, that's what we have.
Kind of interesting. Do you know how common this is?
It's not. It's research. It's not common at all yet. It's not available. However, capsaicin cream is available over the counter. And for people with chronic pain, sometimes capsaicin cream can really make a difference when they rub it over that area. So something
we can try at home.
You can try this at home. That's right. That's exactly it.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. To Savannah, Georgia, we go now. Hi.
Hi, Dr. Zorba and Tom. How are you?
Fine. How can we help you?
Well, I am quitting smoking after many, many years of smoking, and I just wanted to see if Dr. Zorba could recommend maybe some vitamins or a change in diet, anything that's going to help me kind of, maybe regain some of the energy that I've lost from smoking.
Right, right. We lose a lot of energy when we smoke. You smoked for how many years?
Well, I'm 40 and I've been smoking for almost 30 years.
Okay, so that's, you mean started at the age of 10?
Started at about 11 or 12.
Wow. 11 or 12, behind the barn, behind the garage, down the street at home?
Down the street. Moved into town where there were a bunch of older kids that were smoking, and I picked up a cigarette, and I was way too young. And,
hanging out with those bad kids.
And I just, you know what, it's amazing. I was just hooked from the word go. I mean, that very first one, and I've basically smoked a pack a day.
So how long have you been off the cigarettes now?
I'm not.
Okay, so you're not done smoking at this point. Now, let's talk about quitting smoking. Are you going to be in one of the smoking aids, bupropion or Chantix?
I believe it's Chantix.
Chantix is a great drug. It helps. Yeah.
I'm sorry, but I started on that program, and maybe you can help me with this. I started on it, and after about 7 days, my dreams were so vivid, mm-hmm. and I was so tired, I could hardly keep my eyes open.
Right. Well, that may be one of the side effects of Chantix, and it blocks the neural receptors. The receptors, essentially, the nicotine stimulates. And if you have Chantix, you don't use nicotine replacement because it blocks the receptor. If you use bupropion, which was Zyban, you use it with a nicotine replacement such as a patch, and it works. But the aids are very good. Regular multivitamin with folic acid, very important, 0.4 milligrams of folic acid. It's in most multivitamins, will make a big difference. Vitamin D, 1,000 units a day can be very, very useful to help get your energy back. And then I take a B-complex in addition to that. The other thing you want to do, because it takes 20 years before you're back at a normal risk for heart attacks, it won't be until the age of 60 that you return to a normal person that age. But the other issue is some of your lungs will never come back. They're gone. They're gone. They won't come back. The risk for emphysema and chronic bronchitis is much higher than you and than anybody else. So some of the stuff is damage that's there. It's gone. It's not there. But the most important thing to get back your energy is regular exercise of an aerobic sort. Do you do any exercise at all?
I ride my bike, and I do a lot of skateboarding still. So.
Skateboarding. Cool. You're still hanging around with those guys, huh? Yeah, skateboarding with the guys.
But this time,
cigarette hanging from the mouth.
No, this time, non-smokers.
Non-smoking skateboarders? Wow, man.
Old habits die hard, I guess.
Old habits die hard. You can do it. Some B vitamins, good exercise. Congrats on quitting smoking. You know, it took me four good times before I quit, and I only smoked for 3 or 4 years in college. It was very tough, and it was tough when Tom smoked a pipe. Wasn't that difficult when you quit?
It wasn't. I said one day, I'm going to quit, and I gathered up the pipes and the tobacco and threw them in the garbage and never looked back.
But you see, there are two different things. Tom quit. Now, do you have the desire to smoke at all, Tom?
Yeah.
Oh, see, we both do. Now I've got to tell you, I still have the desire to smoke periodically. Periodically, it just revs up. I'll have a pizza. I'll be watching a football game. I'll have a beer, and I want a cigarette. But, of course, I don't have it. Right. But, I mean, that memory is still in my dreams, and that's 25, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
But once you get to the other side, you're there.
Excellent.
Thanks a lot for the
call. I'll call you back.
Yep. Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Sure. More research coming up. We have our medical myth buster. This is interesting. How dangerous is stress during pregnancy? That'll be coming up a little later. And our recipe, this one from St. Louis, Missouri listener Maria Tutsky, is coming up next here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. With Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. More of your phone calls coming up and later on our Myth Buster, but right now it is recipe time. This one, Maria's Vegetarian Chili from St. Louis, Missouri listener Maria Tutsky. Maria, hi.
Hello. How are you?
Fine, and we're glad to have you with us. I'm, as you probably know as a listener, a meat eater, but looking over the ingredients here, this really looks like a good chili recipe to me. You are married.
Yes, I am, and my husband is also a meat eater. Lots of my friends and family that eat it are meat eaters, and they all tell me that it's very good, and it tastes, I guess, similar to meat chili, but I don't really know.
How'd you happen to come up with this one?
Well, I haven't eaten meat for probably about 6 years, and I woke up one fall morning, and it was just like, it was a chilly day. Mm-hmm. You know, you'd wake up those days, and you just want chili that day. It just seems right. And so I thought, well, I'll have to figure this one out. I'm sure I can make chili with no beef.
And that's how it happened.
And that's how it happened. And I'm sure, I think, you know, probably the first few times I made it, it probably wasn't as good as it is now. It was definitely an experimental process, trying to figure out what substitutes best and that kind of thing.
Aha. Uh-huh. And after picking and choosing and changing, you've come up with the perfect vegetarian chili.
I believe so, and my husband agrees, and this is what I've stuck with for a few years now.
Okay, well, as we go along with the ingredients, feel free to jump in, Maria, and let us know, elaborate, or correct, or what have you, okay?
You know, the interesting thing about chili is that we associate the word chili with meat. And the thing about this chili that's kind of neat is that it is a low-fat, delicious chili.
I remember on this program years ago, you coming up with a chicken chili.
That's right.
That was a radical thing.
That's right.
Not beef, but chicken chili.
Yes, white chili. Right.
Yeah.
That's exactly.
But it was still.
And by the way, chicken chili is still one of my favorite recipes for a loud crowd. But this vegetarian chili, Maria, is absolutely delicious. Absolutely delicious looking. So let's go through how we make it.
Great.
And the ingredients. We start out with 2 tablespoonfuls of olive oil.
2 big tea olive oil.
Once again, I love extra virgin olive oil. When I cook with it, I love the extra virgin that I get. I often get my extra virgin on the web because there's a web extra virgin. We've got that listed on our website that I happen to really find dynamite.
Mm-hmm. We have a great little importing store that's within walking distance from my house.
You choose it. You buy it from your local purveyor or your internet purveyor. And then 1 green bell pepper diced.
A green bell pepper diced.
A red bell pepper diced.
A red bell pepper diced.
You know what? I take it if you've got any, you know, if it's the season where there's an orange pepper or yellow pepper, that would be neat to put in here, too.
Oh, definitely. The peppers are definitely open to interpretation. I grew red peppers all summer, so I have a lot of those.
So you love peppers, right?
I do, and I love eating red peppers raw.
So when you do your peppers, do you blanch them and then put them in the freezer when they're done, or you just eat them as they come out of the garden?
I eat them as they come, and actually, we are still picking red peppers.
Wow, that is amazing. Okay, 1 medium onion diced.
A medium onion diced.
4 garlic cloves.
4 cloves of garlic.
Okay, now we've got to explain this. 10 ounces of Morningstar crumbles.
Maria, what are Morningstar crumbles?
Well, there's a couple different brands. Morningstar is just a brand, and there's also Boca, like the Boca Burgers. and Morningstar Farms chicken nuggets. It's meatless. It's soy protein.
So you're camouflaging tofu by calling it some cutesy name. Do I get that right?
Yeah, and they think it's prepared differently than tofu, but it's soy protein, and they already cut, you know, it's flavored like, you know, ground beef would be flavored without using any meat product to flavor.
Yeah, now wait a minute. This does not taste like tofu, Tom. This is a soy-textured product. You know something? He can sniff anything made of soy from a mile away, and that's exactly it. You know, I mean, you may be a vegetarian and we may be carnivores, but he is an anti-soy.
Yeah, I guess I am. But anyway, I'll buy this. Ten ounces of the...
But I want to talk a bit about these crumbles, because I have people who come and they go, wait a minute, you know, it's a vegetarian product and it tastes like meat. Why don't you just eat meat? You know, it's the same thing. The reality is we adhere and we enjoy certain textures and certain flavors in the foods that we grew up in. And there's nothing wrong. It's not really camouflaging soy. It's making the texture similar to meat, which is made of soy. And there's a difference there. It's not as if you're trying to make a soy product taste better. It's that you're trying to make a soy product taste like meat,
right,
in terms
so you
of
can
texture.
Use it in regular recipes that you already have.
Right.
If you're trying to do low fat, my mother, who's a meat eater, she does a lot of the Morningstar and Boca stuff just because it's a low-fat version. You know, she'll make BLTs with veggie bacon instead of real bacon.
Absolutely. And, you know, if you like and you want to have low-fat, they're more often than not low-fat products. They are vegetarian products, and they have a similar texture. And this is okay. I mean, this is what's nice about the changing American palate.
I'm sold. Let's move along.
That's right. His fingers are crossed, and they're behind him. See if he's sold. Sold on what? A 12-ounce can of diced tomatoes.
12-ounce can of diced tomatoes.
2 12-ounce cans of chili hot beans. And if you don't like hot beans, don't use the hot part, but 2 12-ounce cans of chili hot beans.
Oh, no, do the hot. 2 12-ounce cans of chili hot beans.
A 12-ounce can of black beans drained.
12-ounce can of black beans drained.
Now, you drain the black beans, but and you wash them in the sink, or you just drain the fluid from around them?
Could rinse them too if you want, but I just tend to.
Yeah, I think rinsing them actually makes them stand out a little bit in a recipe. And obviously, you don't do that with the chili hot beans because otherwise you'd take off the.
That's already seasoned. Yeah. You use all that.
But I think with the black beans, otherwise, the protein coat that's on the outside, that's the sort of whitish stuff on the outside of canned beans, tends to smush it down, for lack of a better word. Okay, now, these are the seasonings we're going to have chili powder to taste.
A lot of it.
How much do you use?
Probably use a few tablespoons, and you know, because I season at various times.
Okay. Garlic salt to taste.
Regular
salt to taste.
Regular salt.
Ground red pepper. These are pepper flakes to taste.
Ground red pepper.
And if you want some shredded cheddar cheese, you put it on. But remember, when you put on cheese, it's got to be a little bit. Otherwise, you put on fat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's make the recipe.
Good.
Heat the olive oil in a large stock pan. Sauté the bell peppers and onion and garlic until the onions are transparent. Then add the crumbles and season with chili powder, garlic salt, and salt. Then cook until the crumbles are hot. That's about 7 to 10 minutes. Add the diced tomatoes. Season again. Simmer for another 5 to 7 minutes. Then, very important, at the end, basically, you're adding the beans and seasoning them and simmering them for 20 minutes. Because if you simmer the beans too long, they're going to fall apart. Serve in a bowl and garnish with a little bit of cheese, and bon appetit.
Sounds delicious. Maria, what do you serve this with?
I like to serve this with carrot sticks. And I personally eat it with a half of a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, and I dip it.
You dip the sandwich in the chili?
I do. And, you know, I grew up doing this. I went to a small school in a rural town. That's the way they serve it. I actually just talked to my little brother there. He's a senior there now. Mm-hmm. And they still serve it that way, and he does the same thing. So it must be just this little small town that I'm from that does this, but I haven't met anyone else except for, you know, people from my little school that do that.
Up until the dipping the peanut butter and jelly sandwich in, it sounded delicious, Maria.
You really should try. It's really good. My husband thinks I'm crazy.
Don't knock it until I try it. I get it. Thanks a lot.
No problem.
For sending us this winning recipe, Maria gets a free copy of our cookbook, Heart Healthy, Low Fat, Guilt Free, and Tasty Recipes from the Kitchen of Zorba Pastor. And if you want to enter our recipe contest, it's easy. Just email your original low-fat recipe to us at
Zorba at WPR.org.
For today's recipe, send a stamped, self-addressed, business-sized envelope to Zorba Pastor on Your Health, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706.
And if you want this recipe and the nutritional analysis, just go to our website. You can sign up for our weekly recipe podcast and search for all your favorite Zorba Pastor on Your Health recipes. That's at zorbapastor.org.
Our phone number is 1-800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Before we get back to the phone, Zorba, let's help out David in Mason, Wisconsin. David knows that you often recommend vermouth as an alternative to wine in some of our recipes. He'd like to know if he could substitute sake instead of the wine or vermouth, or if that would ruin the flavor.
Well, that's very interesting. Sake certainly is a different flavor. Well, you know what's interesting? I never drink vermouth straight up, so to compare the flavor, but I know it has a different flavor when it's in a mixed drink. I use, you know, vermouth basically because it's inexpensive and it lasts forever when it's on the shelf.
I don't even know what sake tastes like.
You've never had sake?
I probably have, but I know it's not memorable to me.
Sake, well, it's usually memorable. You have it hot. You can have warm sake. You can have it ice cold, cold sake.
Maybe I've never had sake.
Sake is great in small little glasses, and I'll tell you something. You can really get, you can get snackered on sake. Let me tell you, these little glasses, you have some, you know, Japanese food. Well, that's anyway, those are my memories. We'll go through that.
So could you put them in?
Well, you could use sake, but it will change the recipe. So the answer is yes, but it may produce a change in the recipe, and you just have to try it out by tasting it to see what it is. Often when we add wine, we're adding robustness and fullness to the recipe, and sake may add a flavor that you want or you don't want. It's not as if you can put vodka in a recipe other than vermouth. Vermouth is closer to a taste of white wine when mixed and cooked in a recipe, and I've never tried sake.
I don't know.
But hey, that's what experimentation is all about. Try it.
I was thinking, what's with David in Mason, Wisconsin? He has a bunch of sake hanging around that he wants to,
that's exactly
he wants
it.
To blow.
You know,
some
he must be going to sake bars in the middle of Wisconsin. You didn't know that, but Wisconsin is a hotbed, a hotbed of sake drinkers. After beer, sake is number two in that Midwestern state.
Our technical director, Brad, says sake tastes like vodka mixed with cigarette ash.
Oh, gosh.
Is that your
is
sense?
Disgusting. That's just, you know, obviously he's going to a different bar than I am.
Keep those questions and comments and tips coming. Send them along in an email to
Zorba at WPR.org.
And a listener with us now, Zorba in Whittier, North Carolina. Hi.
Hi, how's it going?
Fine. How can we help you?
Well, I have a long story if you guys got a week.
Go.
Excellent. I'll actually give you the short version.
Oh. Well, you know, we can relax. Okay, go ahead.
All right. Well, the short version is basically they put a metal rod into my femur, and it got infected. So they took the metal rod out, and I am now on a course of antibiotics. I've been on them for about 5.5 weeks. I got about 2 more weeks to go. And my question is, the first surgery that I had that developed the infection, before that surgery, I had full range of motion in my hip. After that surgery, I lost about 20% of that range of motion. I can't straighten my leg. I can't do anything like that anymore. I've been to 4 different doctors who have told me that I need a hip replacement, and the infection that's in the bone is in that particular femur. And so that femur, I've been told, can't handle a hip replacement because of the infection.
Why don't you ask some of those people that are talking behind you? Maybe they'd have another idea on it, too. What's going on?
I'm at school.
Oh, okay.
But getting back, what did you have the surgery for originally?
Originally, because of a birth defect. I was born with one leg shorter than the other.
Oh.
And so they attempted to correct it.
Okay.
and it failed.
Okay. Well, I've got a couple suggestions. First of all, you've got to deal with what you have immediately, and that is the infection. So you got to deal with that. The antibiotics that are given are usually strong antibiotics. You've got to recover that completely. The issue of whether or not they'll ever put anything else foreign in that knee won't be answered until 1 year after you are totally free from infection. In other words, it takes a long time. My recommendation in situations like this, which are very, very specific, is always going and getting a second opinion in another area away from you, 100 or 200 miles away. And I'm serious about this.
Okay.
Doctors that are in the same area know each other. One doctor says something, and they're just collegial. And so they don't want to insult the other doctor and say, well, I would do this even though you wouldn't, unless they don't know them. They just don't necessarily give a full-throttled second opinion. It happens, but it's just sort of part of the collegiality, I guess you would say. So my recommendation is going to a university center that deals with this, going to some place that deals with lots of hips, lots of hip problems, and saying, look, this happened to me. What are the chances are that I could have a hip replacement again and it wouldn't get infected? And that's going to be your answer. And the answer is, it may not be now this year or next year, but it may be in a couple of years because of all the things that there is a lot of research on. It's things such as hip replacement and appropriate antibiotic therapy. So what they determine today may not be what's determined 1 or 2 years away, because this is a field that is replete with research. That's my recommendation. Yeah. Clearly, you've got to get the infection under control, and it's got to be under control for a minimum of a year before anyone would even think of touching it, because you could get a worse infection again.
And good luck with it.
Well, thank you very much.
Sure. Thanks a lot. We appreciate the call. More research coming up. We have our medical myth buster. How dangerous is stress during pregnancy? Zorba will talk about that. More of your calls at 800-462-7413 here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Zorba, some interesting research on women and mastectomies. It seems more women now are getting double mastectomies when they have cancer in one breast. They're also having the breast without cancer removed.
Right.
This is disconcerting to me.
Well, there's some interesting issues here that are controversial issues, but they're very important. And let me state right up front, it really is an individual choice for a woman to choose with her doctor what she is going to do when given the diagnosis of breast cancer. That's very important. Now, in 1991, when they discovered that lumpectomies for many breast cancer sufferers and survivors was as good as mastectomies, lumpectomies really became the choice. And most breast cancer surgery, more than half, actually involves lumpectomies and do not involve removal of the entire breast. There are two issues with removal of the breast that's cancerous and then removal of the normal breast. First of all, there's some women who have the belief, which is not true, that if they remove the other breast, if they have breast cancer, they will reduce the risk that they will have cancer. In other words, they will reduce the risk of metastases. And the fact is, there's cancer in one breast. If there's a rogue cell around, usually that cell doesn't go to the other breast. It's somewhere else in the body. But if you remove the other breast, the risk of another primary breast cancer is definitely reduced.
It's
because
gone.
That breast is not there. Exactly.
And if you're a woman, young woman, with a history of
Absolutely.
Breast cancer
Absolutely.
And have cancer in a breast, you've got to have the fear that I'll get cancer in the other breast, too.
Absolutely. But one of the issues is sometimes and quite often this decision is made, that you're given a diagnosis of cancer, and then in the next week or two, you make a decision, this is the type of surgery I'm going to have. Often that's made rather quickly. But then a decision is made, look, I want this breast totally removed, and I want the other breast removed, too. The question is whether or not you should consider a waiting period. Once again, individual decision. Some women may say, say, and maybe it should be suggested, why don't you sit down? Why don't you think about it? We can do the lumpectomy, and we can come back and do the breast removal if you want to. Think about it for 2 weeks. And I'm not saying that this should be prescribed as a waiting period, but it may want to be suggested. Remember, years ago, they did frozen sections and then removed the breast, and quite often the breast wasn't cancerous at all. So there's always emotion attached to this particular type of cancer.
You say it's an individual decision, which of course is true, but there's got to be a right and wrong in here.
No, there's somewhere. No right or wrong answer. There's absolutely no right or wrong answer. If you are at risk, if you have the genetic predisposition to breast cancer and you're at risk, it's not. It's an emotional issue when you have cancer. It's an individual decision that a woman must make with her doctor. And thinking about a waiting period, I think, is an important part of the mix that should be considered.
Our phone number is 800-462-7413. And Zorba, our next caller is in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, Dr. Zorba and Tom.
What's up?
I'm calling about vision spots. I'm a 54-year-old woman. I live a really active lifestyle. I swim, run, cycle, lift weights, teach yoga, and I'm in what I consider to be pretty good health.
Mm-hmm.
But my concern is this. Often, but not always during exercise in which my heart rate is elevated, I will get what I can only refer to as spots in my vision.
This little black spots?
No, they're like bright, silvery, white, searing spots.
Wow.
And it never occurs without an elevated heart rate. So it never occurs when I'm just sitting at my computer or walking around or doing yoga. It's only with an elevated heart rate.
So this is spots you can see? Is there any feeling connected with this?
Not really.
No pain?
No pain at all. They reach a maximum intensity of brightness after maybe a minute, and then they begin to dissipate after a few minutes. And the entire episode only lasts like maybe 3 or 4 minutes. They're never there when my eyes are... They are there when my eyes are open and when my eyes are closed, but when I blink, they momentarily go away.
Okay, now a couple of questions first of all. How's your blood pressure? How's your cholesterol?
Well, my cholesterol is slightly elevated.
What's slightly elevated?
It's 241 total,
okay.
And but the HDL is 96, the good cholesterol.
Yeah, let me tell you something. If you've got an HDL of 96, your cholesterol is not elevated. I mean, you may be elevated, but it's elevated because you've got a dynamite good cholesterol, which is that I assume you don't have any heart disease in one side of your family.
No, I don't.
Yeah, because that would be with that. Because the first thing that comes up with me, your blood pressure is good too?
The last time I had it checked a few weeks ago was 90/66.
Yeah, well, and it fits with that. Because one of the questions I would have is whether or not this is a vascular headache that is sort of almost like angina of the eyes, something of that nature.
Hmm.
Tom brings up a really interesting point because I wonder if this is a migraine variant.
Well, I didn't bring that point up.
No. I got to give you credit for something. I looked at you and you said migraine. You know, he was mouthing the sense.
I was not, but I'll take credit for it anyway.
But I wonder if this, but when Tom said, is this pain, and is it painful, I immediately began to think maybe this is a migraine variant where you're having the visual disturbance without having the pain associated with it. And that may be what this is. Now, migraines can be brought on randomly. They can be brought on with exercise and so on. But this seems to me that since you've got such a tremendously good cholesterol, that this may be a migraine episode that you're having and you don't have the full-blown migraine headache. One of the things that I highly recommend in anyone who has a visual disturbance at your age is that you do see an eye doctor at some point and have your eye examined. When was the last time you did that?
I do that every 2 years.
Okay. And this has gone on recently? This has just gone on between exams?
No, this has been going on for like the last 10 years, but it seems to be more often lately.
Yeah. Have you ever asked the eye doctor?
I haven't. No.
Well, it's your eye, and I highly recommend that you ask. And the reason that I mention it, there are some also strange things that happen with something called retinal detachment or vitreous detachment, but they're not the visual disturbances that you're talking about. I think you ought to have your eyes looked at to make sure there's nothing going on in the globe, in the eye itself. And I think that this is most likely a migraine variant headache. So that's my read on this.
Okay.
Very unusual. Very unusual. Don't let it stop exercising. Exercise is good for the body
Definitely
and good
not.
For the brain and the heart.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much
Thank
for
you.
The call.
Thank you so much.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Bye.
800-462-7413. Zorba, let's get to our medical myth buster now. Today's myth deals with emotional stress during a pregnancy. It seems that would be the last thing a mother would need. Is stress harmful to the baby?
Well, you know, this myth has been around for at least 2,000 years, if not 3,000 years. These are things that you can find
this
in the old writings of the Greeks.
This is a myth, you say?
Yes, it is a myth. It is absolutely a myth. There's, you know, I'll tell you where the data is, where the scientifically okay. data is. So you're ready to say no.
Well, I can't believe
it. In other words, it's a myth that you're adhering to.
Well, it's something I've always
okay.
believed.
Yeah, that's
You want to be careful not to yeah. stress out a pregnant
yeah,
woman because it could harm
yeah,
the baby.
Anxiety may slow cognitive development. It hurts the baby. And the real issue is, you know, what is this about? And has anyone looked at it scientifically? And it turns out there are a couple studies. There was one study which had about 150 women, a little bit less than that. Low-risk normal pregnancies did psychological profiles looking at those who had stress and those who didn't have stress. You know, some were in homes with issues. There may have been issues with parents and with husbands and so on. And basically what they found was that from a point of view of the pregnancy development, there was no difference. And in fact, one study showed that it appears that mothers that are essentially in an environment that has more stress may produce more cortisol and may actually promote fetal development, and it may actually promote higher cognitive development, that children of women who are stressed become high achievers.
So stress out your wife.
Absolutely. Stress out that pregnant woman and you will get a healthier baby that's a high achiever. Can you imagine if that actually were the case? You'd put women in stressful conditions. Well, the issue at hand is stress is never good in your life. And in pregnancy, of course, stress becomes more problematic. Yeah. But this study shows that from a point of view of stress hurting the baby,
Yeah.
Doesn't seem
it
to
be. It isn't good for the woman.
Bang.
It isn't good for the woman, no. But it doesn't harm the baby.
That's it.
If you have a myth you'd like Zorba to bust, just send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Again, our phone number is 800-462-7413. A listener now, Zorba, in Buffalo, New York. Hi.
Hi, how you doing, Tom? Hi, Zorba.
Fine. What's up?
I am usually a pretty grounded person, but I have this problem when I drive, and that is every time I drive, and whether it's my car or my wife's car, I end up building up a ton of static electricity, and I touch the car door when I get out, and I get the shock of a lifetime every time. And I'm just wondering, happens even in pouring rain, even in high humidity. I'm wondering if there's something about my biochemistry that makes this more pronounced in me than in other people, and if possible, what I can do about it.
Your magnetic personality?
Or something to that effect.
I was going to say something like that, you know, where you're a sharp, hot guy, you know, so, you know, people just touch you and they're just electrified.
Yeah.
Tell me about your shoes. What do you wear?
Dockside usually, you know, just regular leather shoes.
Well, first of all, if you put on athletic shoes, you probably won't have the same problem because the sole won't conduct the electricity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, on the whole, didn't you as a kid run on a rug with your socks off and then touch somebody else, right? And
it was fun then.
That's exactly it. It was fun then. Let's get a shock. Isn't that funny? It's funny how things are fun when you're a kid, and when you're an adult, they're not at all. But on the whole, this often is a buildup in the static electricity, and it has to do with the shoes. It has to do with the carpet that you're walking on.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I'd look at the soles of your shoes. You know, if you wear gloves, rubber gloves, you won't have it either, but that would be a funny thing to walk out with rubber gloves out of the house.
To get dates.
Hard to get dates.
What's wrong with this guy?
Yeah, but every time he kisses a date, date, you know, there's a shock in the mouth. That would be a clear term. The other thing you have to look at is really the ambient humidity. You've noticed in high, I mean, usually it's in a dry environment that this occurs. So I'd look at the shoes. I'd look at how you're walking. Do you shuffle when you walk, or do you have like a light step?
I'm not aware that I shuffle, and really this just comes about when I'm driving.
Does it make a sound, or you just feel it?
Yeah, I mean, you can hear it, yeah.
Yeah, it's the shoes, man. That's what I do. I look at the shoes. Good luck.
Rubber boots, maybe.
Yeah, rubber boots, rubber gloves. You'll start a new fashion trend for people with shock.
I love it.
Good luck.
Thanks for the call.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Zorba time now to pay another fine to the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Grammar Police. Actually, this time, it's not a grammar issue. It's more a word choice issue.
Oh, good. I feel much better that it's a word choice.
The citation comes from Bonnie in Denver, Colorado. On a recent program, you were talking about the fight or flight response. However, Bonnie would like you to know that you kept referring to it as fright or flight response. In that response, there's only one reaction: to be scared.
To be scared.
Fright or flight. It's supposed to be fight or flight.
Yeah, but of course, you know, even though I said fright, the reality is it is fright that produces the same response, the adrenal response. If somebody frightens you, you shoot adrenaline into your body. So it's flight, fright, or fight.
No, because if it's fight or flight, that means you have the choice either to actively oppose or run away from.
Yeah.
Fright or flight would be the same. You run away from.
Yeah. No, when I think of fright, sometimes, I see.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Oh, that's very interesting. Oh, I see. but with fright, you could just go, I'm scared, and not do anything, in which case you'll be plowed over by the bear that's running after you.
So you're saying that fright could still be the same active resisting thing as fight.
Who knows? Who knows? But thank you for your comments,
folks. I was
going to say. Keep it coming. You know, English is my first language, we all need a little bit of encouragement.
So you're saying, in essence, Bonnie, the heck with you, but thanks anyway.
Yeah, there you got it. You got it, baby.
Well, don't be frightened to send us your thoughts. Just send them in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Zorba. Thanks a lot.
A pleasure, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or want to download our recipe podcast, visit us on the web
at zorbapastor.org.
Don't forget, you can bug our producer anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's produced by Adam Friedrich. He's to blame. Our executive producer is Charles Monroe Kane. Brad Kohlberg is our technical director, and Gigi Holland fills your recipe requests. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll join us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 1110Z. More on healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, show archives, and listener feedback, is available online at zorbapastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.